The Berkshire Opera Festival is presenting Giuseppe Verdi's masterpiece Rigoletto with performances August 25th, 28th, and 31st at the Colonial Theater in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. The production is conducted by Artistic Director Brian Garman and directed by General Director Jonathan Loy. A timeless story of love, betrayal, and vengeance, Rigoletto tells the story of a young woman suffering at the hands of a self-entitled and abusive man. A theme never more relevant, unfortunately, than in our present day. Brian Garman and Jonathan Loy join us this morning. Welcome.
Hey, Sarah.
Thank you, Sarah.
How are you guys doing?
Good.
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 Why Rigoletto this year? How was it chosen?
Well, we decided to come back this year to an opera that is a little bit more traditional. We did Strauss's Ariadne auf Naxos last season. So we wanted to present something more traditional this year. That was the first thing in our mind. The second thing in our mind is that we had the cast for it. The baritone who's singing the title role, Sebastian Catana, and we had wanted to do something for him for a while, and he happened to be available. So that was part of the decision. And Rigoletto, for both Jonathan and me, has a special significance in that, at least in my case, it was the opera when I was a kid that got me hooked on opera initially.
Same for me.
Wow.
Absolutely.
That's a cool coincidence.
It is.
With there being so many out there. What was it, if you can recall, reach back, what was it about Rigoletto when you were young that hooked you?
It was the first full recording that I bought. I had heard opera on the radio, fell in love with it, and for some reason, I can't tell you why I bought Rigoletto, but, the music of Verdi is something that, for both Brian and I, just spoke. We understood it inherently, if that makes, even at such a young age. It just said something to me, and I think for Brian as well.
Yeah, for me, when I was growing up in rural Iowa, this was in the late 70s, early 80s, I mean, there weren't a tremendous amount of opportunity to see live classical music. And my grandmother and a friend of hers had taken me to an opera before. It was Barbara of Seville. I wasn't really into it. I must have been 12 or 13 at the time. And then a year later, they took me to a production of Rigoletto. This was a New York City Opera touring production. And there was something about it that just made sense to me. The musical language made sense to me. And I thought, I get this. And that was all it took.
So what do you, as a company, think about as you put up, as you mount, one of your favorite operas?
Yeah. Rigoletto was the first opera ever directed professionally. And so to come back to it, and I've worked on it a few times in between, to come back to it now, as we started, once we decided we were going to do Rigoletto, the first question was, well, what am I going to do with it? Because Rigoletto is one of those pieces that's done so often that everything has been done to it. And
has it been set on the moon?
Actually, yes. In fact, in Germany,
well, there you
I believe.
Go.
Yes. There you go. It really has. Everything has been done to it. And as we grow as a company and it's our third production, we've wanted to make statements that are relevant to our audiences about great pieces of music. And take a fresh look at them. So what's really important to me is putting something actually that's really aesthetically beautiful on stage. Mm-hmm. People pay money for this ticket, and they should have a wonderful experience. That really kind of drove the initial decision, which was to do this in black and white, to kind of really pare it down. We have the best singers in the world. The set is basically a three-sided muslin light box that is meant to take white light. All the costumes are being built from scratch. All black and white. All the women are in white. All the men are in black. The principal men are in 50 Shades of Grey. And very sparse furniture. So, and every furniture piece and prop is high gloss black to contrast the white set. And in this minimalist palette, the singers really stand out. Their talents will come across, but we can really tell the story. And without imposing hashtag Me Too onto this production, because it's already there. I mean,
right.
That's what the story, it's underlying underneath this whole story that is really about a curse, in fact, but all of these other sub stories going on. And I think the audience will get that. And sometimes things are just black and white, and we're going to present it in that way.
Tell me about your design team that's working with you on the concept.
Oh, we're so lucky. Stephen Dobay is a set designer. He's done everything for us so far. Actually, the whole team is in place, really, since the first season. Stephen Dobay is a New York City-based set designer. John Froelich is a lighting designer. He's the resident lighting designer at the Metropolitan Opera, a wonderful colleague of mine. Becky Kravitz is wig and makeup designer. She's from Cummington, but she was a resident designer at Los Angeles Opera for many years. Who am I? Charles Kane, our wonderful costume designer, who was having his costumes built from scratch, ran the Metropolitan Opera costume department for many years and then went on to a very big career in many other opera companies. He's also local in Great Barrington. This season, I tend to add dance to the production. There's a solo male dancer and a solo female dancer. They're actually a husband and wife team. They're also colleagues of mine from the Metropolitan Opera. As it happens in live theater, Julio Teixeira has had a hip injury.
Oh, no.
He's going to still co-choreograph with Ana Luisa Luisi, his wife, but we've just hired a new dancer, actually local from Albany, and we're really excited. Vincent Brewer is his name, and we're really excited to have him on board. And the male and female dancer are kind of representations of the male is kind of a representation of the Duke and all men, and the female is a representation of Montarone's daughter and all women. And they play a kind of a crucial part in the storytelling.
So how do you manage to entice these professionals to come to the Berkshires in the summer?
If you do good work, the word gets around. Mm-hmm. Of course, we work hard also with our fundraising, because if you want great artists, you have to pay.
This Absolutely.
doesn't come for free. But the people who have collaborated with us up here for the past two seasons, I think have had a really positive experience, and word of that gets around.
Very true.
So you are a young company. This is the third production, your third season.
So third production, yeah.
What have you learned as you've done this the last 3 years? How have the audiences been? What hole are you filling? How's it going?
Yeah, we've learned a lot. You know, when we incorporated the company in 2014, we knew that we were undertaking something bigger than us, and we were able to produce Butterfly in 2016. And I think sometimes we still look back and go, wow, how did we do that? How did that happen? But here we are. No, I mean, the learning curve is immense. You know, every day something different happens, and you take it in and you figure. I'm being very vague because it's such an overwhelming question to answer, but maybe you can.
Well, when you've worked for decades in the business, you know, you learn things along the way, and you plan as well as you can and as far in advance as you can. And inevitably, there's always something that you just didn't think about. There's something that you just never crossed your mind. And so these are a lot of things that that you learn along the way.
Yeah, we have also certainly learned. I mean, Rigoletto is, I'm going to say, is selling very well. So we encourage people to get their tickets ASAP. And clearly, you know, the Berkshire audience is interested in things that they recognize, and we understand that. It doesn't mean that we won't do lesser known works. That's part of our mission. But we may do them as we grow on a second stage type of scenario. So, you know, that was a clear lesson that we learned. You know, the little things like that.
Of course.
Yeah.
There are 3 days of performances once you get up. How is that decided? How is that the length of the run determined?
Well, this was initially determined by not only the length of the run, but what the dates were in our first season by when the theater was available. It happened to work out for us well insofar as if we open that last weekend of August, the classical part of Tanglewood is basically over at that point. That helps in terms of reducing competition for ticket sales.
Of course.
Which is always valuable. And beyond that, it's a financial issue. In other words, financially speaking, you know, we have about enough money in terms of theater rental and all of the other things that go into it to produce for about a week, right? And really, you can only do maybe three shows within a week if you only have one cast. Because of the physical demands that it takes to sing these roles, you can't do it on back-to-back nights. So that's why we chose Saturday, Tuesday, Friday as our model.
Yeah, and we're actually really excited that we're opening with a matinee, which is selling really well. And that was a new thing for us. And we had not done a matinee to this point. And so that was, the hand was forced a little bit because we're opening on the same night as Tanglewood's big gala. And we thought people would be able to do both. And in fact, certainly it seems that way. And we're probably getting audience members that are much more comfortable coming to an afternoon performance because they can still drive during the daylight hours, right, and have a meal. And so we're excited about that.
Yeah, the matinee idea was something that we had wanted to dip our toe into anyway. And so now that we
Turned
sort of
really
have
well.
To, I'm glad that it seems to be working out.
How do, as the conductor and the director, how do you two work together to build an opera?
That's a great question. Brian and I have known each other a long time. We share very similar taste in terms of style, musical language, and we're also very good at staying out of each other's way when you need to do that. We're very sensitive of each other, I think. And I respect Brian so greatly. I will often turn to him if I'm staging something. I say, does that work for you? Can you make that work musically with what you need to do? And I know Brian will do the exact same thing for me. If he wants to make a decision, his concern would be, how does that affect you and what you need to do dramatically?
I agree with all of that. And I also think that we both realize that...
It would be so problematic if you didn't.
Yes, it would. Well, right now.
Actually.
This happens from time to time. It hasn't happened with us yet, thank God. But this is something that happens. But we also both believe, I think, that the two components, the dramatic visual element and the musical element, are inseparable. They are all of a piece, and the drama, what happens on stage is motivated by the music, and the music exists to serve what is happening on the stage, and you can't really separate the two.
And if I could add, as an operatic stage director, more than half of my job has been done by the composer. And when an operatic stage director realizes that, it makes the job, easy is not the word, but it makes your job, you understand what you need to do. And I would say, as a stage director also, who runs a company and works with Brian, if I don't have the best singers that technically really can sing, it doesn't matter what I do, because this is opera at the end of the day, and you need the best voices. And that ultimately is kind of number one in our opera company.
How does what you do here in the summer with the Berkshire Opera Festival fit into the rest of your professional year? You have to think about it all the time as you're traveling all over the world doing your work.
Yes. We both run the company on a daily basis in each of our respective positions. And so when I'm at the Met 35 weeks out of the year, that means when I'm done rehearsal and I get home to my apartment in New York City, then I open my computer and I work on Berkshire Opera Festival for another few hours before I eat dinner, go to sleep, and do it all over again. We're already fully cast for 2019. We're going to begin our discussions for 2020 very soon and get that going as well.
Yeah, I mean, there are busier times and less busy times, but it's a 12-month a year job. That's for sure.
Does it feel sustainable? Are you guys doing okay?
Yes, every year it does. Every year we're doing better and better. Certainly, every arts organization has to deal with the philanthropic challenges, and there are always big hills to climb in terms of fundraising. But our donor base, the size of our donor base, has more than tripled since we started, and we keep doing better and better.
Yeah, and I also think the reason that Rigoletto is selling, not only because it's recognizable, but because I think people are starting to recognize Berkshire Opera Festival.
Right.
Of course.
And understanding the work that we're presenting to them here in the Berkshires.
Indeed.
It sounds like a staggeringly interesting production, and congratulations.
Thank you.
And break, what do you say in opera?
Toy, toy, toy.
Toy, toy, toy. I was like, I just realized, I don't know, dance and theater, but toy, toy, toy. The Berkshire Opera Festival presents Verdi's Rigoletto with performances August 25th, 28th, and 31st at the Colonial Theater in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. BerkshireOperaFestival.org for more information. That link will be posted along with this interview at WAMC.org/roundtable. Thank you guys for being here.
Thank you, Sarah.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.